So I wanted to open up with some honesty. This is so stupid. This is what I had planned to do, and now I'm like, oh, this is dumb. Let's just do it. I can't remember how this starts though. Oh, it's a little bit funny. This feeling inside. I'm not one of those who can easily hide. You know that. I forget the lyrics though. A little bit funny, this feeling inside of those who can easily hide. Excuse me, forgetting. I can't fucking remember the song anymore. I was gonna talk the lyrics to Elton John. I can't remember it now.
This
So it
possibly
failed.
this possibly the worst opening to the podcast yet. That
But
was
now
so
it's
bad.
the best because it's because it fell so flat in its face. I was literally reciting it before you came, and it was perfect. And I was just like left my brain.
The
I
fact
got
that
nervous. I
you're
got performance
reciting,
anxiety.
Jesus.
I thought you just need a song. But anyway, I hope you don't mind. I hope you don't mind that I put down in words how wonderful life is with you in the world.
Can we just get cracking on with this? I'm not here for all this bullshit. I'm here to talk Simpsons.
Always gotta do a cringy opener. Anyhow, guys, welcome to the Let Sebastian Have a Simpsons podcast. The podcast myself and Sebastian here do for our moms. As a gift for our mothers. That's fair to say, right?
Yeah, I don't think she listens, but
I thought you said your mom does listen.
no, my dad does.
Your dad,
Yeah, my
I
dad
got.
and my girlfriend.
I think I told this on the podcast before, but shortly after I started doing it with you, so I was already doing the podcast like 2 years, year and a half, a while. Like my mom messages me being like, "How do I get the podcast up?" I'm like, "Oh, so you've never
What
listened
the
to
hell?
it?"
You click on the link?
Hadn't a clue. Had never listened to a podcast in my life. Did not know how one
Go
accesses a
on
podcast.
Spotify, Instagram, or any other social media platform and search the Sebastian Ever Simpsons podcast. And you give it a follow and you send it to your friends.
Please do. Although it doesn't really work as an advertisement when they're in the podcast already.
Oh, yeah.
But
Oh,
it
it's
gets
just a
sent to your
reminder.
friends.
It's a reminder.
You can watch it on any platform that podcasts are available. Apparently, a 45-year-old woman doesn't know how that works. It's
So if
bizarre.
you are thinking of canceling your Spotify subscription and protest at the poor revenue distribution, then it's on
Pay
YouTube
your
for
artists.
free.
It's on YouTube for
You
free.
can
It's on a
watch
bunch of things for free.
us in a video form,
Yes? Look at our hands, our
whether
faces.
that's your cup of tea or not.
If you like two very white boys,
Yeah,
plenty of people do.
that apparently looks similar. I don't think so.
Look similar-ish. I can see the resemblance. I'm not too confused by it. I'm not ashamed of it either. It seems like you are. How unfortunate. But anyhow, guys, today, we are covering Iron Marriage, which is the sixth episode of the 35th season. Shall we just jump in?
Let's do it.
Righty ho. So we open up with Bart watching TV late at night. He's watching John Wick going into an ice cream parlor. The villain comes in and is like, "Now you're gonna scream for ice cream, John Wick 4." In very kind of raised fashion,
Also,
goes, "It's gelato."
John Wick 4 was actually a really good film.
I must confess, I haven't seen
It
three
was
or
really good.
four. Yeah, I heard fantastic things about it. Yeah, I mean, I remember doing screen checks for it, and it always looking fantastic. The action sequence was just bam, bam, bam. I remember it being a recommendation from you. I remember seeing a bit of the scene, the staircase, that looked
Oh yeah, that was
sensational.
crazy.
Yeah, I mean, they're great films. I mean, one thing that makes them so special is that they're directed by a guy who used to be a stuntman, so he has such a first-hand experience in that area that makes it
I
every
think it,
scene pop.
as well, they don't mess around with the fact that it's like an action movie. They
Yeah,
have
doesn't try
obviously
to
the
get
dramatic
deeper.
scenes and the story, but they're like, cool, let's get that out of the way and jump straight back into the
Yeah,
action,
it
which is
doesn't
what
take
you
itself
want.
seriously. 100%, yeah. That guy's great, David Leitch. Looking forward to the Fall Guy as well.
Oh
I
yeah.
wasn't at first, I thought the trailers looked cringy, but so far as we're getting
I thought so
amazing.
too.
Yeah, but so far as we're getting amazing reviews, so I'm like, okay, I'm hopeful. Maybe they just didn't market it very well. But to be fair, I like Ryan Gosling more than I would like to admit I like Ryan Gosling. He's one of those just like handsome guys who gets everything he wants. It's like you don't want to like him, but he's just so great.
He is great.
He's just
He
a
is
good
great.
actor. He's fantastic. I was about to say an underrated comedic actor, but I think because of Barbie, he's now kind of getting his praise as a comedic
True.
actor, but sensational. And Ken is by no means his best comedic role. Like, Nice Guys is absolutely sensational in.
True.
Oh, such a good actor, man. But anyhow, getting sidetracked. Yeah, so John Wick starts throwing hot sauce at the villain's face and then stabs him with a cone, which is brilliant. And Bart's just, like, so happy being like,
"The violence Mom won't let me watch is the best."
And we cut to the wise guy crashing his car outside. And the whole neighborhood gathers around, and Helen immediately judges that Marge is using headphones as a cord for her gown. And they see she also has a mark on her sleeve because she used it as an oven mitt. And Luann says that Kirk buys her a new robe every Christmas. And Sarah got a Chanel robe from Ralph, bought with his Tooth Fairy money. I love that detail because he bought her a robe with the money she gave him.
Yeah.
So good. And the parents are shocked to hear that Bart and Lisa never bought Marge a robe, which is a quintessential mom gift. And she says that she gets homemade gifts from her kids, like turkeys and hand turkeys and stuff covered in macaroni. I remember making gifts for my mom like that all the time, feeling like I was so... That was the best son ever. It's like, definitely threw that shit away.
Yeah, it's meaningful, though.
It is meaningful, and they like it when you're young, to be fair. It's sweet. And you don't have money, so what else can you do?
But, as you get older... Sorry. As you get older, gifts... It's sort of like you get a gift.
They become meaningless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll be like, well, I could have bought that. It's hard to get gifts now where it's, you wouldn't think, well, I would have just got that anyway for myself.
That's
it's
true. Just,
it's more so, it's like you get gifts and it's like, cool, I don't have to buy that for a while then.
Yeah.
Like a deodorant box set or like pants and socks.
That's
and
true,
like,
yeah.
Oh, cool, now I don't have to buy some for a while. It's like, but I would have just bought it anyway.
Yeah, it's handy, but yeah, it does feel so meaningless. It's funny, it's getting harder and harder to buy presents for people because we're so like spoiled as a human race.
True.
Like, my mom loves music, so I used to always get her CDs, but now it's like she has music accounts and also a car that doesn't play CDs, so it's like I can't get those anymore, you know. It's like, now my go-to is just vouchers, but vouchers is like the most meaningless gift ever. Like, you made no effort.
Honestly, like, vouchers and gift cards,
they're the best.
I think
I want those.
The easiest gift.
Yeah, I want those as well, but it's like I basically didn't buy you a gift, I just gave you money. I may as well have just given you a £30 note or whatever.
I know,
which isn't
a
thing, but you know what I mean.
It's just not acceptable. Yeah,
yeah, but it's just the easiest, handiest thing to do, and then they can get something that they know they want that I don't, better than I could get them, you know.
Is macaroni art, like, is that a thing we do here?
Did you do that? I think that's bigger in America. I mean, macaroni in general is much bigger in America than it is here. But you do see it on TV shows a lot, like shows set in kindergartens and stuff. They're always like making macaroni arts to their mom and stuff. Yeah. No, I never made macaroni
art. The American school systems failed so hard. Making macaroni art.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. that's the first step towards failure right there. It's a food, not an arts and craft thing. That sounds like a fucking Bill Burr tangent. What the fuck? They making macaroni art for? It's a food. You eat it. There's a hunger crisis happening. You can't be making art with macaroni.
This is very accurate.
Very, very Bill Burr. But we see Homer stepping on a loose barbed wire, and he warns Kirk about it. And Kirk's like, "Oh, thanks, Homer. You're the man." And he feels really gratified by him calling him the man. And Carol tells him that if he wants to be the man to everyone, he should post about the barbed wire on Alarmist, an app that warns nearby people about local dangers. And he posts about it under the username The Simp, and he says the risk of electrocution is 1000%, and the whole town erupts into a frenzy and they all run away. We cut to Brandine being like, my baby could have played with that wire, he ain't born but he's about to be. Runs away. Very, very good. Always find great jokes to do with the hillbilly family. And then Combo Guy comes over and welcomes him to the Alarmy Army. They check the poll, they see The Simp is currently at the bottom, followed by all the usernames were fantastic. The Simp followed by Savior Skinner, Stay Charm and Carry On, All Hands on Deck, obviously Hands Moment, Wailing Warnings, Disco Sus, Dr. Panic, and Herman's High Alert at the very top. And Homer vows to get on top of the leaderboard if it's the most useless thing he ever does. We then cut to Bart and Lisa. Lisa says they need to buy Marge a present this year instead of pasta art. And Bart says they have nowhere to get money since Otto stopped paying for clean urine. Great detail. The most illegal thing ever. He's buying urine off children.
But also, it does make me think that, like, how do parents expect their kids to get them presents if they don't have, if they're like 7 and 10?
That was so weird on Mother's Day, wasn't it, though? They don't actually expect you to. It was such a weird thing where, like, they'd had this lovely, you had this lovely present got for your mom, and you think you've convinced them that you've actually
bought them a present.
But obviously it was your dad. Yeah. You know, for me, it was my stepdad. But
or it would be from the money that you got as pocket money.
From them, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But they know. It's not like they're idiots. Mm. They obviously know how it was bought. But they make you think...
How did he buy them?
Yeah. They make you think that they're at a loss. Like, I don't know how they did this, you know? Or sometimes they would make, like, shady comments to the dad. You know, like, oh, you got the flowers from Tesco. Oh, yeah, lovely. Really splash out this year.
Taking the label off.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of shit. It, like, goes over your head because you're a kid. It's like, oh, she loves her present. Then Bart and Lisa say that Flanders is very generous as he sold... Lisa has sold him so many... magazine subscriptions, even Cat Fancy, and his cat isn't even that fancy. They ask Ned if he needs help with some gardening, but he says he always keeps his grass trim.
I always keep my grass trimmed. You know the old saying, the lawn is the mustache of the house.
He then offers them both $44 if they can clean the two leaves on his sidewalk. And Bart's like, boat leaves? And he's like, deal. We then cut to them going to buy her a robe, and a spike, it falls in front of them. It's so perfectly timed. I remember, this was kind of nostalgic for me, because I remember stuff like this, and like, the spy kit they have in this episode is what you wanted those spy kits to be. 100%. You know what I mean? Yeah, this is like those spy kits, it was actually how a child envisaged them, but they were always like super cheap, probably 15 euro or something. They were crap, you know? Like, but this is like proper.
It does get me thinking, like, Bart is 10.
Yeah,
Lisa's 8. I don't really remember wanting toys like that when I was 10.
10? I think I would have been 10.
I just think I was getting a bit too old for that.
You think? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe so. I can't remember specifically being 10. To be fair, though, they do always kind of like move the ages around to suit convenient. The story. Yeah, because there's other episodes where Bart like should have been 16 in terms of like what he was up to. You know what I mean? Like some episodes where there's been
smoking
many.
Smoking crack. And
when those ones, he's 40. He should be 40. That's when they're really running low on ideas. But make him a crack addict? Yeah, fuck it. Like, there's been a bunch of episodes where he's had girlfriends. Like, at 10 years old, you do not have an attraction to women. You know what I mean? Those episodes, he's like, he may as well be 15, 16. Insane, yeah. But yeah, fair point. This episode, he's probably, like, the same age as Lisa, really. Age is more realistic. Because, it's true. They are, like, proper kids in this episode. Like, trying to get their mom a present, 100%. You know, yeah.
Making macaroni art.
yeah, exactly. Proper children. We see this spy kit comes with a pen that's actually a tape recorder, an eavesdropping device, and sour gummy cyanide capsules. Bart starts imagining the possibilities. He's imagining him listening in on Nelson's counseling session, and Nelson's like, deep down, I knew I was a dingus. And Bart comes in and demands both of their lunch money, including the counselors, or he'll leak the recordings. And Lisa starts imagining the possibilities, and she's listening in on the cool girl meeting, where they decide that the new cool thing is wearing earmuffs in warm weather. And Lisa just passes through wearing earmuffs. It's like, oh no, now Lisa's cool too! And they all start crying, and we cut out Lisa's being like, yes, cry, Sherry, cry. But it was just specifically Sherry she had an issue with for some reason.
Sherry is a bitch, though.
I don't know which one is which.
Sorry,
it's not clear. Yeah. But like, she specifically didn't like Sherry the most. But yeah, Sherry, they're airboat bitches for sure. They're like one of the only characters. Like, I say, like, oh, I don't know. Like, oh, I'm a fake fan. I don't know which one is Sherry, which one is Sherry. There's no personality type, you know. You can tell who's Patty and who's Selma. I think you have to be paying close attention, but you can, if you're paying attention, tell who is Kang and who is Kodos, but Sherry and Derry, no idea. No fucking clue. Yeah, you know? The only way I remember is there's the bit in Citizen Kang where the deeper one goes, I'm Kang, this is my sister, Kodos, and the higher pitch one goes, hello. So that's how I know which one is which. Kodos is the girl who speaks a little higher. Mm. That's my only way of remembering. That little scene is very handy. Love Citizen Kang so much. They then decide that marriage has never been a gift person, so they decide to buy the kit for themselves and an ironing board cover, which is basically like giving her a whole new iron. We didn't go to Marge's birthday party. It's the fucking lamest thing ever. Just at a table with the family and Ned for some reason. And Homer gets Marge another charm for her bracelet. And she's like, oh, you know me so well. And he's like, oh, I better after however many years. She then opens the ironing board cover from Lisa. And Lisa's like, yeah, because, you know, you like ironing. And she opens one from Bart. Bart's also bought her a separate ironing cover. And he's like, what you get for the woman who only has one iron board cover? We cut to Homer leaving. He wants to try and get 3 more points to stop Cautionary Gill and Cry Wolfcastle on the leaderboard. Again, the leader names I thought were just consistently fantastic.
Also, charm bracelet.
Yeah.
100% genius gift idea.
It's great. Yeah. It's so handy. There's
people in my family that do that, and they just get a charm, and I'm like, you knew you were going to get this.
Yeah.
It's the easiest thing.
It is easy. I feel like the joke here... Yeah, it's a great investment. Yeah, I think the joke here is that it's too easy.
Yeah.
You know,
people but are catching on now.
Yeah, 100%. I remember my longest relationship was absolutely obsessed with a particular jewelry brand. And for every birthday and Christmas and stuff, she would just send me the wish list. And it's just, you know, cost of living crisis and all that consistently going up over the years. It kept getting more and more expensive. And it killed my soul having to pay the money that it costs to get these little necklaces and stuff like that. It hurt me. I don't miss that. We didn't cut to Marge seeming very disheartened. While she's ironing, Bart cuts in being like,
enjoying your present, huh? Don't play with it all day.
We didn't cut to Lisa using a spy duster to find out who broke the vase. She sees 2 separate paws and finds out that it was Cecil Helper and Snowball, like, in cahoots with each other.
Also,
random detail.
Very, like, Lisa's very out of character so far in this episode.
Oh, yeah, I guess she's been a bit more childish.
Moral thing for Lisa to do.
That's true.
She would be the one being like, no, we can't do that.
That's true, but she does have a moral compass later. I didn't feel like it was unearned. Because, you know, sometimes you do kind of just, you create reasons in your brain to think that it's morally correct, you know what I mean?
That's
true. I think that's what she was doing by being like, you know, Marge's never really been a present person, you know? She would want me to have the spy kit, but then later on she's like, okay, no, that was wrong. But yeah, I hear your point though. Bart says that Marge loves her present and she can't seem to stop muttering about it. We then cut to Homer reporting a calming chamomile billboard that says itch please. He reports it saying that it's guaranteed danger of corruption and to keep children away from the Noiseland arcade. I wonder, is this actually an app? It must be, because it feels, well, it's probably not called Alarmist in real life, but it must be something because it feels very specific.
Yeah,
the storyline, you know, it must be a parody of something. Like, some app probably came out and it went too far because of people wanting to be the hero. Yeah. You know, makes sense, something that would happen anyway. Maybe it'll be something they predict. We cut to Milhouse seeing the billboard. He's like, I get it. Itch means bitch. And Kurt puts his hand over his mouth, being like, don't. Mom hates that word. Trust me. I love that line. But that fell out of character. Like, I could not imagine Kirk calling Luann a bitch. And Homer says that he needs one more post to make the top 5. And he sees Lovejoy jogging and he posts being like, religious man jogging through town, possibly from a murder spree. Avoid outdoors. And one starts running away. They say, number 5, I'm burying everyone. Great line. We then cut to Bart and Lisa using the eavesdropping device again. They overhear Frank explaining to Frank's monster that its name is not Frank. He's like, Frank's sad. Like, no, Frank's monster is sad. One of my favorite things, they hear Mo complain to his rats that they've been eating pool chalk and leaving chalk dust all over the place. And he's like, don't look at each other, look at me. Hey, Steve! He has them named. I thought it was Steve. It's a person's name. They overhear Flanders talking to Marge about how wild her party was yesterday, that he'd never usually take his water on the rocks. Then Marge just starts crying, and he tells Marge that feelings aren't stupid. Some are evil, but none stupid. And she says that she feels unseen. And Bart doesn't understand that, because she sees her all the time. He sees her in his phone contacts 3 times under the names Mom, Mommy, and Sandwich. They both feel guilty and imagine how they feel if she half-assed their birthday. So yeah, that's kind of like what we said, like them kind of moralizing what they're doing finally. We didn't cut to... We got to Homer. He's now number 1 on the Alarmist app. He's strolling through the park with Barney and he reports a leaking sinkhole. And then someone named, we see someone named Silver Bullet has already reported it and is now number one on the leaderboard. We see it's Agnes Skinner. She tells him that his fat fingers are too slow. He's like, oh, your days are numbered. He's like, tell me something my doctor hasn't. He's like, oh, you smell like old lady. And she's like, so do you. I smell like a lot of things. Again, immediately love their dynamic. Yeah. A great little person to put up against Homer who we'd never seen him with before. I'm not sure if they ever even spoken.
Yeah, so that
was
true.
That was a great person to put together. That's like a great thing you can do with the show because you have so many characters. It's like, oh, what would these two characters be like together that we've never seen together before? And that's still something that they haven't
still.
Still so many people that we haven't seen these characters paired up together before yet, you know. So Agnes and Homer was a great unexpected one, I thought. We didn't cut to Bart and Lisa said trying to make a list about everything they knew about Marge. They're both struggling. Bart remembers that her real name is Margaret, and they write that down on the whiteboard. Lisa says that she loves coming to her jazz recitals, but Bart admits that she hides a copy of People magazine in the program, and they picked the perfect magazine there. It's such a mom magazine. It's a basic celebrity gossip magazine. They decide to use the spy kit to break into the trunk where she keeps all her memories. They break into Marge and Homer's wardrobe. We see that Homer has an alien survival kit. And it's just a shotgun and a 24-pack of Dove. Fantastic. The lockpick works perfectly, which immediately makes Lisa concerned. She's like, I'm not kind of worried about those cyanide capsules. And find out that her name is actually Marjorie, not Margaret. Which I was happy that happened, because the moment they said Margaret, I was like, I'm pretty sure they said before it was Marjorie.
So,
I was glad they fixed that deal. It was just showed how little they actually knew about their mom. They find out she had a pet parrot named Petey. They see pictures that showed they were best friends, just like Bart and Sam's little helper. That was so sad. He's at the end of the door with like a bowl, begging for some water, and he's like, I can't play now, boy. Shuts the door at him. So sad. They see that the Marge's parents gave the bird away. And they realize that parrots live to be 80 years old. I never knew that. 80 years is wild. And so the parrot's probably still alive. They see the parrot was taken to North Townsburg. Bart says it's a pretty sketchy area.
How long do parrots live?
That's what they said in the episode, 80 years. I don't know 100% how factual is that true? But I don't know. It's crazy if that is true. Yeah, look it up. So some animals' ages can be shocking sometimes. Like I know horses live to be like 35, 40, which I find wild. But yeah, that's the episode said 80. Some parrots would be longer than people under that logic. But yeah, it's absolutely wild. I want to fact check that before we keep going.
So some species are 60 years. 40, still 60 years.
Crazy long. That's mad to think that if you bought a parrot today, it could last you the rest of your life.
Oh, however,
mm-hmm.
If well cared for, they can live even longer in captivity. There are examples of the hyacinth macaw living more than 100 years.
Wow.
So it's rare, but yeah.
It can happen if you take really good care of it for the rest of your life. Fucking hell. I mean, I could not imagine. I mean, I'd love to have a pet someday, specifically a dog. I would never have a parrot.
Fuck, having a parrots.
They can
so
talk.
Annoying.
Yeah, they can fucking talk. They'll start impersonating you. It's like just having a consistent permanent hater in your house.
Isn't that amazing though?
Hey Seb, hey Sebastian.
Isn't that amazing though?
Whoa, that they can that talk. It's crazy.
Like, that is amazing.
What a human glitch of
also,
a fucking thing.
It's the same with like, imagine having like a pet monkey. It's just too much.
Oh,
it's
too much to take care of.
Like,
too loud.
On you all the time, and they like, they're just because they're almost human.
I know. So it's actually bizarre. Yeah. Yeah. Insane.
They are cool though. When I see monkeys,
cool.
I'm actually fascinated when they're like walking around doing stuff because I'm like so close to us.
No, I mean, we're descendants of fucking gorillas. Like it's or apes, should I say? It's really, really wild. Yeah, and they're so close. They're like just the ones that missed out, monkeys.
Yeah.
They nearly became one of us. But yeah, they decide to go to North Townsburg to get this parrot. But basically, Bart says it's a really sketchy area, and the Milhouse's dad was a science bidder for a mesh clinic there once. Just great detail. Lots of little fun Kirk bits throughout. But Bart just goes, let's do it for Margaret. She's like, it's Marjorie. Oh, whatever. We then cut to them arriving into North Townsburg. We immediately see it's a dodgy area. They have three stores. One's called Liquor and Weed, and there's called Liquor, Weed, and Tax Preparation. They didn't spot the corner where Nick Cage was crazy, and they even erected a statue to commemorate that moment. I love that. The place where Nick Cage went crazy, should I say. I don't feel like Nick Cage went crazy ages ago, but I guess in the Simpsons world, this is where it started. Yeah. Then ask the auto service guy about Petey, and he says that...
What's the skinny on this Krista character?
Well, she owns the craft store down the block. She also sells liquor and weed.
Let's go. Don't leave town.
But my niece's wedding is tomorrow.
I said, don't leave town.
Fine. Hey, Cheryl, it's Vince. I can't make it. I don't know. Some kid told me I can't leave town.
That's my favorite of the whole episode. Bart just like ruining this woman's wedding for no reason. Like he's a detective or something. We then cut to Homer, still in the park, struggling to find something to report. He finds a fallen tree branch and reports it as death from above. And he makes Martin and his parents flee. And Agnes calls him a toad-faced beanbag. All the insults were consistently great as well. And says she shall cut him into tiny little pieces like her son's pancakes. He's like, I'll eat you up and crap you out like my son's pancakes. She reports that the air is full of pollen and individuals with lungs should avoid the area. Homer reports lifeless bodies, possibly a gas leak. It's just people lying down on sunbeds, or not sunbeds, under towel mats, just napping. Agnes reports a demented man throwing objects at a duck pond, just Jasper throwing bread into a pond. They report a chemical air attack of the play yard, just Rotten Todd blowing bubbles. UFOs hovering over picnic area, kites. And a spring-guided dragon, most likely time travelers, just those Asian dragon kites. Then after running amok trying to report all these things, they both fall into the sinkhole. And Homer says, or Agnes says, the earth couldn't handle the weight of his ass. And Homer says that Satan heard her voice and decided to fast-track her to hell. And Agnes is like, okay, we both got one in. They then start shouting for help, but everyone is fleeing the park because of all the horrible things they reported. We then cut to Bart and Lisa finding Krista. I'm just now realizing that while the whole side story for Homer, a lot of it took place in the park. At the same time, Bart and Lisa like are at home, take this 3-hour journey to North Townsburg and go back. How long was Homer in the park? It's like he was just there for hours trying to find things to report. But it makes sense to his character, especially how obsessed he got with this app. Again, just Homer being brilliant, just like making something his whole personality. That's always in Homer's his best. Krista says that Petey was an amazing parrot who could impersonate anything, such as political figures and even the You Lose horn in The Price is Right. She says that he flew away one day when she left the cage open by accident, and Bart tells her to stay in town. They storm off. He's like, but my daughter's wedding is tomorrow. Oh man, she calls. She's like, Cheryl, bad news. I just love that. Bart's just like ruined someone's wedding day. He has the best detail of the whole episode. We then cut them finding Petey with a flock of parrots, and Bart gets him down with a recording of marriage. We then cut back to Homer and Agnes in the sinkhole. They realize that they scared everyone away, and Homer's like, oh, isn't that ironic? He's like, oh, I guess. He's like, no, I'm asking you what the meaning of ironic is. And then we see Agnes has a suite, and Homer demands that she shares it, as they'll both need strength to fight off chuds. And she's like, no, my weather is my choice. And again, there's a perfect suite. Just Murder's Original is the most old woman suite there is. Yeah.
I love them.
Oh, they're delicious. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. But like, if you're going to do a gag of a woman having a suite, it should be a Murder's Original.
They're perfect suites to suck on as well. They actually are, though.
No, they are, yeah, because they last a while. Time, yeah.
It's true, though.
They do.
They are great to suck on.
They're a good swallow, too. Once you get down to the very end.
Yeah, once you like, start getting into it a bit, you swallow, it goes down nicely.
Oh, it's delicious, yeah. No, it's one of the best I've ever tasted.
Very sweet. They're creamy, actually. They are quite creamy, because they're quite buttery.
Very, very buttery. No, I do enjoy a good...
Just the right size as well, to suck on.
Actually, you want to know a sad thing I just realised?
I hate when it gets caught down the back of your throat, though.
You know, a sad thing I just realised? It's a weird time to bring it up because of the gag we were just doing. But
gag.
I haven't... God damn it, how did I see that? I haven't had a Words Original since my grandmother died.
Oh, shit.
Isn't that sad? Yeah, both of my grandmothers were dead. Haven't had one since the last one died. It's just, you're not around them.
Maybe you should revisit
your grandparents aren't around.
Have a Wovers original.
Yeah, yeah, in their honor. That'd be nice. I do enjoy a good Wovers original, but it's been a minute. It's been at least 3 years.
I'm gonna get some after this.
Oh yeah, I heard you were. Yeah, lucky you. Yeah. Oh yeah. Agnes starts choking on the Werthers. God damn it! And Homer saves her. And she's like, Simpson, instead of mongering fear, you mongered life itself. And he realizes that helping people was the feeling he was after, not a leaderboard. And he boosts Agnes out of the sinkhole, and she swears to tell everyone that he's stuck down there, and that will make her number one on Laramie all over again. And she reports a hairless ground hippo stuck in sinkhole, and Homer just goes, she's horrible. It was a nice little sweet moment at the end that I did not anticipate, because it just felt like such a, you know, fun and games little side story, but him being like, oh, I wasn't looking for a leaderboard, I just wanted to help people. It was like a sweet little realization at the end. We then cut to...
Actually, sorry,
yeah.
Just going back to the Werther's original thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I find it funny because I mentioned Werther's original before.
You did. No, I realised that as soon as you said it.
Yeah.
What was it again? You said my tea.
Yeah, you made me a cup of tea, and I always say I want my cup of tea to look like the same colour of Werther's original.
Mm. And I nailed it.
And it looked like a Werther's original.
Credit where credit is due to me, yeah.
You nailed it.
Yeah, I did realise as soon as you said that, like, oh, that's a gag in the episode. I was like, I don't want to make reference to the Simpsons when we're about to make reference to the Simpsons for a whole hour. Let's have
true,
a conversation
yeah,
not related to it for once.
So, you catch that Simpsons the other night?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It might shock you guys to hear this, but when we're not recording, we actually don't talk about the Simpsons that much.
Well, like I said, it annoys me when people, like, when people, because the problem with social media is people think that, like, your online selfish personality.
Yes.
I don't use it much.
Yeah, yeah, dude.
I go on it like a couple times a day to see what people have sent me and whatnot. But, like, so people, I'll see people in real life, and because they only know me as online, they don't see me much in real life. They'll be like, oh, like Simpsons, blah, blah, blah. Just because, obviously, like, everything I post on my story is usually to do with The Simpsons.
Yeah,
podcast,
yeah.
So.
They think,
you know,
Simpsons is your favorite thing
fine,
in the world.
But I just hate that people think it's my...
It's your whole personality.
Whole thing. Yeah.
That's so funny, man. Yeah, I mean, I get that even more because I'm posting comedy clips all the time. So, like, I had one recently. It's so stupid. Just, like, do not understand what a joke is. Someone at work asked me, because I put up a video making a joke about O.J. Simpson, where I said, he's definitely my favorite Simpsons character. And he was like, do you actually like O.J. Simpson? Like, do you think he's innocent? And I'm like, oh, come on, man. Like, can you not read irony? I'm making fun of him in the joke because I think he did kill her.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Fucking hell.
Well, as well, like, when I left my old job, someone was like, best luck everything, and I hope, like, the podcast, like, succeeds and everything, which is a nice thing to say.
It is, yeah.
But at the same time, it's not the only
it's
thing.
It's not your whole personality. Yeah, yeah, I know. It's just because you post about it on social media.
Yeah,
it's one of the only things you post about that people do think, oh, that's, I guess that's his main thing. But yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I hope the podcast does succeed. To be able to make a living on this someday would be a fucking dream.
Of course,
which is why we want anyone listening to it now or half an hour in, so you're the dedicated listeners. Start sharing it around. Let's get this thing known, baby. But Bart and Lisa introduce Marge to Petey, and she immediately gets panicking and is like, how is this happening? And Petey attacks her and defecates on her and chews up her hair, and she says that she could never have friends over because of how possessive Petey was. She says she wanted a kitten, and since Petey could meow, her dad decided it was close enough. Bart says they went all the way to North Townsburg and did not make friends on the ride home, as Petey is pretty racist. And she's amazed that they went through all of that just for her.
We went all the way to Townsburg.
We wanted to get you something, you know, personal for your birthday.
Yeah, we did not make friends on the bus ride home. Petey is kind of racist.
Well, that's just...
We're sorry. We didn't mean to re-traumatize you with your childhood nightmare bird.
My wonderful babies. You went to all that trouble for me. I wasn't an afterthought. I was a thought.
Yeah, because, you know, we see you as a person.
We really do. Our favorite person.
Again, just like surprisingly sweet moment from, like, you know, I guess what they were doing was sweet, trying to find Marge a nice present. I just didn't anticipate the heart at the end. I thought it was well earned the way they did it. And we get our final tag of the episode. The whole town's rushing outside once again after hearing a car crash. And Marge is like, a lovely new gown. Helen compliments it. And the women are all amazed. It's from France. And they're like overwhelmed by the folds and the fabric on the folds. And we see that Bart and Lisa just clicked car crash on their distraction generator. And we see the other items are Black Hawk Down, fireworks mishap, and cattle stampede. And Marge reports on a walkie-talkie that the mission has been accomplished. And yeah, sweet little conclusion to a pretty simple but nice episode, I thought.
Yeah. Wasn't a big fan.
Oh really? I really couldn't tell. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there were good.
I knew you didn't like Thirst Trap. This time I couldn't tell.
Yeah. There were obviously good things about this episode.
I really liked it. Yeah.
I did enjoy the exploration. Like, Marge has been long overdue a proper sentimental episode about,
for sure,
how hard working she is.
Mm. Although, funnily enough, she's actually in it the least of the four.
I know, it's interesting.
It's about her, but yeah. Bart, Lisa, and Homer have more to do.
Exactly,
yeah.
Mm. And Homer's side plot, you couldn't go wrong. It was really
so
good,
fun,
really
yeah.
funny. I just felt, it felt like there were too many holes for me in terms of, like, I
couldn't... Sinkholes? Sinkholes?
I couldn't understand... why Marge was so upset. I understand why she was upset, but I think it was a bit, it didn't make much sense, because it's like, how, I understand if you were upset with Homer, but you're upset with your 10-year-old and 8-year-old kid.
That's true.
Because
they didn't buy you a present.
It kind of, that to me, just again, it made the whole flow of the episode a bit like, well, it seems like a big deal.
Yeah. I hear your point. I feel like if you're gonna think about their ages too much, it'd be hard to enjoy
true,
a lot of episodes
true.
Because, like I said, their ages fluctuate so much from the story.
And I wouldn't.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that you've got them doing stuff like macaroni art
and
buying a toy that makes it hard to not think about that.
That's true. And suddenly they're like on a bus
on
a 3-hour journey away from Springfield. Yeah.
So that's my issue with the episode is it didn't make too much sense to me.
Yeah.
But Homer's side plot was super cool, super funny, super interesting. Obviously, I do like that they were exploring this thing of Marge, and it was unique that they kind of had this story about Marge that was from other people's perspective.
Yeah, I liked it. I like how they did that, yeah.
And I kind of liked that little moment with Marge and Flanders, and I think that's something
sweet,
I would like them to explore more.
I love their relationship, actually,
So,
you can tell Ned sees Marge
for
in a way that the rest of the family don't.
100%.
And Marge loves that about him, but
I
like, will never fully admit to it, obviously.
The fact that he's now widowed as well
exactly.
makes that even more interesting.
Yeah, yeah, it's such an interesting dynamic,
yeah.
but obviously he's a Christian man, he would never do anything, but there's definitely a chemistry
I'd love to see
there.
An episode like that,
yeah,
that could be a really
maybe
deep...
even just like an alternate reality or something.
That
yeah,
that could be a really deep episode as well. Like really, like could be a two-part. Like
100%.
Yeah,
I wrote an episode that I read in a very old podcast with Brendan called "Happy Birthday Homer." It was the first Simpsons episode I wrote, and that one is literally about like imagining a reality where Marge and Homer get divorced and she leaves him for Ned.
Oh,
so yeah, that's definitely
cool.
a relationship that intrigues me also.
Yeah. Copyright.
yeah, please, if you ever want to do anything with it. I mean, that episode was definitely very intentionally written, like something that they would never do. I think the one I read with you, the Homer goes back to college one, is more like, that feels like a Simpsons episode. This one's a bit more experimental. It feels like a Simpsons episode if Charlie Kaufman wrote a Simpsons episode. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So
I'm proud of it.
Yeah, 6.5.
6.5
is
what I
was
thinking.
It's not bad. It's just not, I wasn't a fan.
Sure, fair enough. I'd say I really liked it. Like, it definitely wasn't anything special, but it was very simple in a good way. Like, we like to have these episodes every now and again, because especially with the later seasons, they're doing really interesting experimental ones. But then you like when they do one that's like so classic. I wrote this episode felt like one that could have came out in season 3, you know, because it was just so simple and family oriented.
Speaking of season 3, Seb's Classics coming.
Very true. I mean, crazily enough, I won't tease what the episode is just yet, even though you might have read it in the description. This episode is more normal than that episode.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's definitely more out there season 3 episode, but typically season 3 is quite a family oriented, simple plot lines. And this one felt like if this had been in season 3, you wouldn't have questioned it. It would have been right in there perfectly, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the only difference would have been instead of the alarmist app, it would have been like a community, you know.
Yeah.
That's the only difference. But I know I really enjoyed it. I thought it was nice and simple. I liked the Bart and Lisa plot line. I thought it was very sweet. Like you said, just them doing something for Marge was lovely. I absolutely loved the Homer storyline. Like you said, you can't go wrong with just Homer obsessing over something and making it his whole personality is always brilliant, and I absolutely loved his dynamic with Agnes. I thought their back and forth was brilliant. You could tell they worked really hard to get the best jokes, like the insults 100%. And stuff like yeah. That was fantastic. I thought the spy kit and the alarmist app were both really good plot devices. They were both good little things to put into the stories to give them a lot to work with. Mm-hmm. You know, because the spy kit was like, oh, you can do so much with a spy kit that's actually a good spy kit, and then the app was a good way to kind of get the whole town involved with Homer's story. You know, I thought they were both utilized very well, and just the consistent gags throughout, just consistent really really good gags. I'll wager you a question. Do you think you would like the episode more if the focus was the other way around, if the alarmist app story was the main plot and apparently someone was the subplot?
It's hard to say. No,
yeah, I agree,
just because like that story was told in a way that it could be a side plot. It was very simple.
Yeah, I agree. I prefer the Homer plot, but it's kind of like a less is more.
And
one.
We've also seen a lot of episodes in recent seasons about apps.
That's true.
That,
yeah,
like are taking over the town. Everyone's using them. Mm. So
yeah, I thought this one yeah. did it very well. But yeah, for sure, I agree. I prefer the Homer plot line to the Bart and Lisa one, but it's best the way it is as a subplot. I feel like if it had more to it, it would have been weakened.
Yeah.
Less is more, like, yeah. It was good as the fun and games side plot when you had a slightly more dramatic main plot of them trying to do something nice for their mom, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, like, not the most memorable episode, but, like, fun while it lasted, and if it came on TV or whatever, I would happily watch it again.
Mm,
that's how I feel about it, yeah. Did I say my rating? I gave it a 7.5.
Okay.
I'm not sure if I said that, yeah. Yeah,
shut the fuck up.
Yeah, sorry, man.
Yeah, shut the fuck up.
I'm not going to shut the fuck up. We still have more talking to do.
No, Dylan, shut the fuck up.
Seb's classic in a second. Do you want to take over?
Oh, yeah, true.
Do you want to take over the news?
Yeah.
You want me to shut up?
Dylan Simpson News, Dylan Simpson's News. Dylan Simpson's News.
It's the Simpsons News. I was thinking you read my writing.
I was joking, by the way.
No, I know. But well, this is an interesting even if you weren't joking.
Thing to do anyway.
I'd have to keep talking.
If I can read this.
Just this news segment here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's two pieces of news.
Producer Al Sean?
Gene.
Al Gene. He looks like Sean. Al Gene.
It's the Irish man in me. Can't resist writing Sean.
Reveals an upcoming episode towards the end of the season that will parody The Bear.
There you go. That's cool. That. Yeah, yeah.
That's a really interesting...
There you go. Yeah, very exciting. Yeah, yeah, yeah. For sure. And then the second piece of news?
Second piece of news is the internet goes wild as episode aired on Sunday entitled Cremains.
Not a word.
Cremains of the Dead. Tells off Saw's regular.
Kills off a series regular. Close enough. Yeah, right?
Shit, okay.
Pretty exciting. Yeah, I'm very excited for this episode. I know who the character is. Do you want to know? Or do you want to keep it a secret for yourself?
I actually want to keep it a surprise for myself.
Yeah, sure.
Because then, you know, I might call you up at 3 a.m. and be like, Dylan,
I can't believe this. Yeah, yeah. Keep the anticipation building.
I'll be crying.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think,
it's very interesting.
Don't tell me who it is, but do you think I'll be upset?
No. To be honest. I think you'll
be
like,
Lisa.
I think, yeah, yeah. I think you'd be like, that's cool that they did that.
Oh,
I don't think you'll be upset.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Say no more. Say
yeah.
No more.
It's the 15th episode. This one we just did was only the 6th, so we're a little while to get there. But
yeah.
You'll probably forget, and when you get to it, it's like, oh shit, this is the one he was talking about. But yeah, the editor definitely was surprised by it. Very very exciting, fun. It's like you're so far in. Why not do stuff like this? You know,
in a few months we'll find out.
Yeah, totally. And what I love about The Simpsons is that unlike most cartoon shows, when they kill off a character, they stay dead. I really like that. Like,
yeah.
Like Maude has been dead like this whole time. You know, I really like that. Cool. Let's jump into Seb's classics then.
So Seb's classic this week is, I didn't actually know it was a controversial episode.
It is
until
it's the only episode of the entire show to be banned.
Yeah, until I told Dylan it was this one, and then you know because. Sometimes I don't watch it on Disney Plus. I watch it in another legal way.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I mean, this is on YouTube, so that's how I watched it.
For Stark Raving Dad.
Yeah. So I don't want to get too political here.
Yeah.
I'm going to state my opinion. The episode was banned shortly after Leaving Neverland came out, and James Earl Brooks one of the producers put out a statement being like, while I don't condone book burning, this is our show and we are allowed to rewrite our history.
Yeah.
And I don't agree with that. I think that's still a form of book burning. This is an episode you made. It's also a fantastic episode.
You're not allowing people to even see that.
Access it. Yeah, it's a pretty great one. It's a solid beginning to the third season. Yeah. I don't agree with it. And also, pretty much all the events of Leaving Neverland have now been retconned. You know, like, there's so many things that came out that, like, it seems like most of those stories aren't true. That's why I'm saying I don't want to get too political. I don't know, you know. But it's just, like, whatever. Separate the art from the artist if these things are true. I don't know. I think it's stupid that they pulled this episode. It's kind of popular opinion now, actually. Actually, Four Figure Discount only did, like, a re-review of the episode. Because it's kind of coming back, coincidentally, because I know you totally dispated randomly, it's kind of coming back again. People are debating it, like, should it be banned? And the majority opinion is, fuck no.
No.
So, yeah, there you go. But, yeah, Stark Raving Dead, let's jump in. So,
all of that aside, Stark Raving Dead, classic episode in the third season. Homer is so mistakenly sent to a mental institution, befriends a man who believes he's Michael Jackson. Get, like, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest vibes.
Oh yeah, very, very clearly inspired. Yeah, for sure.
The episode is hilarious, but also heartwarming, has memorable moments like Jackson's cameo voice appearance.
Of course.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, he was the biggest star in the world when this came out, I feel like this episode was definitely a huge turning point for the show. Like, okay, this show is big. We have the most famous person in the world doing a guest appearance. I mean, the whole history, if you haven't read into it, I recommend it. It's very fascinating how they got him on the show and stuff, but there's some crazy details to it.
This is like, still early days.
It's only two seasons in, but he had a contract with a publicist and a record label at the time, and he couldn't legally do work for another company. So his name in the credits isn't his actual name. It is his voice, but isn't his name.
Oh, so he got the paycheck, but he got away with it because he didn't.
He's uncredited, But then also, he could not legally sing for any other company at the time, so it's not his singing voice.
Oh, okay.
It's some impersonator named Kip Lennon.
Oh, man.
It's him actually speaking. Whenever he sings, it's somebody else. Yeah. Oh,
that's cool.
Probably ruins the episode a bit for you. Yeah.
I didn't even
Happy
know
Birthday
that.
Lisa isn't actually
that's
him.
That's how good the impression is.
Fantastic, yeah, totally. When he does, like, Billie Jean and stuff, you would not think it wasn't Michael Jackson,
So, obviously, I think this one's widely... I looked at the IMDb rating, and it's still very high.
8.6, I saw,
Which is, for a overall Simpsons, that's probably top 100.
It's high, it's high up for sure. It's great.
It's obviously still loved.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's great.
Yeah.
I mean, before you get into the Michael Jackson stuff, it is just a great classic Simpsons setup. Like, Bart, he doesn't even seem to know how much chaos and destruction he's causing Homer in this episode.
Yeah, I know.
He puts his red hat into the washing with his shirts, has made them all pink. And I love the line where he's like, I'm not popular enough to be different. And he goes in with the pink shirt, and Mr. Burns immediately spots it and is like, who is that man? Simpson, eh? And tries to get him sectioned and asks Bart to fill out the thing answering questions about him. That sequence is so brilliant. Yeah. Where he's like, do you hear thoughts in your... Do you hear voices? And he's like, I'm hearing a voice right now. I'm trying to watch the TV. It's like, do you get angry easily? Bart! And he just takes yes for everything. It's like, oh, do you wet the bed? Like, oh, we all make accents sometimes. He just yeses everything. And then Mr. Burns immediately sets him up to get sectioned. It's funny, me and Sebastian wrote a script recently that I'm sure will come into light someday about a character getting sectioned. And we should have taken inspiration from this episode.
Yeah, we should have.
And I know, I totally forgot there's an episode for Homer.
Maybe subconsciously we have.
Probably did, yeah. Because this episode definitely lives somewhere in the back of my brain.
I definitely took a lot of inspiration from Peep Show.
Yeah, that's where we got the idea for sure. But this is such a great example of, like, that kind of classic storyline of a character getting sectioned to isn't actually crazy. It's done so well here, yeah.
But yeah, it's one of them episodes where it's also just perfectly balanced.
Oh, it's so good, yeah.
With, like,
it has a nice bit of heart,
which
is where
Simpsons are at their best. Yeah, it's got heartwarming moments, hilarious.
And the chaos of the
Homer's mental really institution. Coming into his own as well. So
yeah, you can tell he's not 100% like who he's going to become yet, but he's definitely getting there. He's getting stupider, you know. Yeah, it's nice to see the origins of him.
So great it's so episode. Fun, yeah, people may not have watched it in a while because it's not on streaming.
You can watch it on YouTube.
Go on YouTube. There. Go on, you know, other ways of accessing. And
but the YouTube one is like quick and easy and good quality, so I'd recommend just clicking up that. It doesn't deserve to be, you know, erased from history, in my opinion. As much as I love James Earl Brooks, I think he's an absolute genius, I don't agree with that statement. I think this episode is good fun, and just watch it and see it for yourself.
It's
very
watchable. It's a 9 out of 10 for me.
9 out of 10 for me too, for sure. It's classic. I mean, there was a point, definitely not anymore, but there was a point where this was my favorite episode.
Really?
Yeah, I was younger, and like I loved Michael Jackson.
Not a bad show.
And I love Happy Birthday, Lisa. I think that song is fantastic. I just like that, like you said, the balance of like, I think the all the stuff in the mental institution is so fun. Like when he's in the guy who's like an agoraphobic, he has a fear of like big areas, and he was saying I couldn't leave my bed, and he was like, oh, the door was locked. It's like I couldn't even get in the car. It's like, oh, you're out of gas. Like, he couldn't understand anything he was talking about. All that stuff was fun. That you had like the nice little balance as well with the Lisa subplot of her being so upset because they forgot her birthday because of everything that was going on with Homer and Bart. And I think the heart at the end of like him writing that song with Michael, actually Leon Kompowski, and just like when you're over the end, it's very sweet and very well done.
Very sweet.
I also like how they kept it consistent that Lisa was actually 7 up until this episode, and she turns 8 and remains 8 for the rest of the show.
True, actually. It's a fun it's little some detail. Canon there.
A fun little canon there for sure. But yeah, what else was I going to say? There's some really fun history after this episode also, because the episode was so popular and it came out. They wanted to do a sequel where Leon Kompowski comes back, but he now thinks that he's Prince. And they're going to get Prince to voice him. Yeah. That would have been a really fun way to get celebrities to come back.
Yeah.
But doing something fun with them is just having them be this crazy guy who thinks he's a celebrity, you know? That's really fun. I mean, he's also voiced by 3 people in the episode, which is another thing to note, is that he's voiced by Michael Jackson, the impressionist for his singing voice, Kip Lennon. And at the end, when you hear him speaking his regular voice, that's Hank Azaria.
Okay.
So yeah, 3 people. Yeah. We find that he was actually like a man from Brooklyn who was always so prone to anger, but as soon as I started talking like this, it made me feel so much calmer.
Yeah.
And then when he's leaving at the end, Lisa's like, "Oh, you're an inspiration to dementia." It was such a fun little Lisa line as he's walking away and just like humming the Happy Birthday song in his regular Brooklyn accent. Yeah, it's a really fun episode. Yeah, it's super well written and really seeing the show kind of finding its voice, because you saw the kind of grounded, more season 2, season 3 storyline happening, but again, a little bit crazier and wackier with Michael Jackson and the mental institution stuff. Just, yeah, wonderful, wonderful episode. Yeah, cool. Let's jump on to Keep It Short. For people who don't know, this is the segment where I cover all the Tracey Ullman Show shorts. This week's one is called Burp Contest. Originally aired June 28, 1987. I actually saw recently that it was the first Tracey Ullman Show shorts 37th anniversary, which is absolutely wild. But yeah, this one was, you know, none of these are great, to be honest. That's kind of why it's kind of fun, because it's just the show.
Yeah.
Well, it's not even the show. It was a short on a sketch show at this point.
We do get, like, Homer here, like Homer.
He's still the classic, you know, Walter Matthau voice,
being
but a
stupid.
Bit more stupid, yeah, for sure. Yeah, basically Bart and Lisa are having a burp contest, and Marge said it's not allowed. They keep going back to it, and Marge is like being really, really strict and slightly out of character. She's definitely a bit more of a pushover now, you know, where she's being super strict, being like, when I say no burping, what do I mean? I know you won't disappoint me. But then they keep burping, and Bart eventually declares himself the burp champion. But then Maggie takes over and wins instead. Mary says not to do any more burping because they're crude, vulgar, impolite, and nauseating. And then Homer, comes in and burps, and he's like, he comes in like, how's it going, everybody? Oops, pardon my French. And Bart's like, yeah, good one, Dad. That's the end of the episode.
Thank you, son.
Thank you, son. Yeah.
Thank you, boy.
The shorts aren't perfect, but like they're good fun. A big thing I definitely spot with the shorts is I read some of Matt Groening's comic book that got him discovered by James Le Brooks called Life in Hell, which is before The Simpsons, obviously. And you can really see his sense of humor in that going into the shorts. You don't see that sense of humor as much in the actual show, but definitely stuff like this, like Marge shouting at the kids, being like, you know, burps are cruel and impolite and nauseating. That's very like the kind of jokes that Matt Groening makes in Life in Hell. He's clearly been very obsessed with like how society expects you to behave, and then somebody behaving differently to that. You know, he was definitely really fascinated by that. You can sometimes see that in these shorts for sure. It's a fun one. It's not perfect, nor any of them, but they're definitely interesting to explore.
For sure.
Yeah. Anyhow, let's jump into recommendations of the week, shall we?
Yes.
As always, rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors. Ayy.
Someday, my friend. You know me too well.
I guess so. I'm the master.
This is actually baffling.
How much I've won. Yeah. We should.
I don't know what your trick is.
I don't know either, man.
You've won like 98% of the time.
You think 98%? I was going to say 90%. Yeah, maybe it is 98%.
I only remember like one actual time.
I could actually only. There might have been more than one, but I can only remember one as well. I'm feeling bad here. I'm like, I need to try and start letting you win. But anyhow, yeah, my first recommendation is Civil War. Mm. You're in this movie?
Yeah.
Alex Garland, you haven't seen it, no?
I haven't seen it. No.
Fantastic.
I do
want
to watch it.
Fantastic. Alex Garland is brilliant. I wasn't a huge fan of his last movie, Men, which is very clearly a Colwood film.
You weren't a fan?
It was okay. I didn't love it. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. I didn't love it.
It wasn't amazing.
It wasn't Ex Machina, you know. Oh, it wasn't God, 28 man. Days Later, yeah.
Yeah. But we do have to let it off. Like,
because it's a Colwood movie.
A lot of restrictions.
Yeah. Yeah, restrictions. Jesse Buckley is amazing in it. Roy Kinnear is sensational in it. But I just didn't think it was... My standard of Alex Garland, who I just think is a fantastic writer and director.
Yeah, Ex Machina for me is like top five.
Sensational.
Like, it's so good.
Sensational. I haven't watched it in a while, but in my current memory, I think I actually might prefer Civil War.
Wow, okay.
It's so good. It's him at his finest. So bleak. Just exceptional writing, brilliant character development, such a good movie. Do you know the concept of it?
Yeah-ish. I've seen the trailer.
Yeah, it's like imagining what would happen if a modern-day civil war actually did happen in America. And I was really kind of thinking that it would end with some sort of like hopeful, not to give too much away, but some sort of hopeful message. It actually doesn't at all. It's very bluntly just being like, this is what's going to happen if we don't learn to get along despite our differences. You know, and not expecting everybody to be like us and all that kind of stuff. It's an amazing commentary. Done perfectly. The cast is sensational. First time seeing Kirsten Dunst in something in a while, and I thought she was amazing
she's
in it.
Amazing.
So good. I can't remember the guy's name in real life, but he plays the guy in Narcos. I forget his name now. Pablo Escobar.
Yeah.
That guy is fantastic. Wagner Moura is brilliant. He's brilliant in it as well. Just sensational cast all around.
Do really want to see this, yeah.
Yeah, that younger girl as well, I can't remember her name either, but she played Priscilla Presley in that movie. She's also a brilliant actress. Just all around, great cast. The story, the way it escalates is done really brilliantly. I always say that I don't like war films a lot, because I find the war films are often very interesting at the beginning, and then when you get to the final act of the film, it just becomes a bunch of explosions and shooting up, and they kind of the character development becomes secondary. You know, I find that a lot with war films. This movie does it perfectly, where it does become more action-packed and intense towards the end, but they don't forget to keep the character dynamics alive, you know.
Yeah.
And by the end I was bawling.
Wow.
It was just such a good, powerful message. I think it's really a movie of its time that I think needs to be seen. It's special.
And
yeah.
Annihilation is obviously also a really good film.
Oh yeah, he did that. That's a great movie also. Yeah, sensational film.
Great score.
100%. Oh yeah, his scores are always fantastic. Yeah, just an amazing filmmaker. And this is him putting his powers to the test here with a very, you know, tricky, specific commentary, but he nails it. Yeah, really, really fun. Not fun movie. Really, really enjoyable movie.
Yeah.
I'd highly recommend it. Yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, what's your recommendation?
Well, I've got two this week.
Awesome.
I'll keep the first one short and simple because it doesn't need exposure, really.
Mm.
But the Fallout series.
Oh, sure.
On Amazon Prime.
Yeah. I've heard it's good,
yeah.
But I mean, if you want to indulge a bit, and why?
Oh, it's just like, you don't need to have played the games. I think people will look at it
you have to be a fan of the games.
You don't. Like, it's amazing.
That's good.
Post-apocalyptic sci-fi.
Mm.
It's like, it's terrifying. but also funny, but also like heartwarming. It's like a really good balance of everything.
Nice.
It's like, you know, when you watch like a horror film and afterwards you have to watch a cartoon.
Oh, really?
It's like, with this, you don't need to do that.
It could be that show. Because it kind
of outweighs the scariness sometimes.
Right.
But the concept is amazing, and they've just nailed that world, that post-apocalyptic world. I think it's actually quite a realistic way of something that could potentially happen.
Nice.
I'd thoroughly recommend that.
Super cool. I think
it's 8 episodes or an hour long. So
nice, you can fly through it. Yeah, I'm really like impressed and happy that it seems to be as good as the praise people are giving it, because it's just so consistent. Excuse me, that video game adaptations don't do well. Yeah, that's always most of the time. But yeah, it seems to, because obviously Fallout has such a very intense, dedicated fan base also, and it seems to be the very large consensus that it's fantastic. Sure. So that's really awesome to hear. I'm definitely really intrigued, and I love that kind of like campy sci-fi stuff that looks like it's right down my avenue, so definitely want to check it out for sure. Cool. My second recommendation is a much more lighthearted one, Old Dads. Bill Burr's film on Netflix.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, it's popped up.
Yeah, he wrote, directed, and stars in it, and it's so Bill Burr. It's literally like if you put his stand-up into a film form, but done very well. Is he plays like a dad, a person who becomes a dad later in life, which is very autobiographical to him, obviously. And he's just like someone who's just frustrated with how the world is changing around him. But it sounds in a very humorous way, but also having like a nice little commentary. And it actually gets kind of deeper towards the end, which I didn't anticipate. Like him kind of tackling his anger and trying to get better and stuff. And you can tell it's definitely at least somewhat... He doesn't literally play Bill Burr in it, but you can tell there's definitely some personal stuff to him in there. A really, really fun, just like joke heavy movie. Just nice to see an R-rated comedy, because they're made so rarely now. Bill Burr isn't afraid to go there with those kind of jokes. Sure. Yeah. I love what he can get away with also. And this is a super fun movie. It's only an hour and a half long. You would totally throw it on Netflix.
I'd love to watch that.
Yeah, totally just throw it on Netflix and have a good evening. Bobby Cannavale is what I think is a sensational actor. He was one of the mob members in the fucking Martin Scorsese film, The Irishman. He was also in that show he made called Vinyl. I think he's a brilliant actor. Underrated, actually. And he's one of the old dads in this also. And his comedic timing is just brilliant. Just a really, really fun movie. Highly recommend. Just a quick, simple, you know, turn on and turn your brain off. You know, really, really fun. Hope he directs more films, yeah. But yeah, what's your final recommendation?
Yes, my final recommendation is a YouTube channel.
Oh, nice.
I don't think I've recommended this before. Guy called Peter Santinella.
I don't think so. No.
So this guy, he's got about 3 million, almost 3 million subscribers. But his description of his channel is, "I make videos showing you the world that the media fails to capture."
Ooh.
So
damn.
His videos, honestly, it's changed my life. It's changed the way I look at the world.
Jeez.
It's changed how much I think exists in the world. Like, he goes to places that the media just doesn't go to. It doesn't show you the people that live here, it doesn't show you like real people.
Wow.
Like, for example, solo road trip through the forgotten South. Inside a rarely seen rural corner of America, and he's following this guy that like lives off farming crawfish, and you know, it's just these amazing real people. You know, I watched one yesterday, and it was about a guy in like the deep South Appalachia, and he lives completely off the grid. Like, he technically has no government identity.
Oh, wow.
And he just lives off his own farm and land, and and the biggest thing that stood out to me in that video is he's so happy.
Nice.
Like, yeah, this guy has no so idea about peace. Any of this. He just and he just felt his calling was, because he grew up with a computer and with parents that had a TV and everything, but he just felt his calling was to just be on his own, living off the land, and he's happy. He's got horses, he's got a farm, he feeds himself. This is a self...
God, that does sound pretty great, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Sounds like a good life. Yeah. Fucking hell.
So, anyway, Peter Santinello, if you want to see a different outlook on the world, Check it out. Genuine guy, forms genuine bonds with people, has asked the most important questions, is respectful. Just amazing content, man. Amazing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Fascinating. And what how do you spell his surname? Is for people who might...
So, Peter normally, but...
of course, Peter, yeah.
Santinello, S-A-N-T-A-N-E-L-L-O. Santanello.
There you go. Cool. I'll check him out as well. Yeah. Funnily enough, that's actually something that's explored kind of briefly in Old Dads. They meet a guy who's the same as that dude, like a recluse who lives in like this land that he owns all by himself, played by Bruce Dern actually. Yeah. They make such a good point about that, how like if you just fucking isolate yourself from news and social media and stuff and just like focus on your own life, you are just gonna have more peace, and it's okay to live that life, because can't concern ourselves about these things that are totally out of our control. We may as well just focus on what we can control.
I mean, if
that's why those people have so much inner peace, because it's just what's in front of them that they concern themselves with.
If the news was just to tell us like fun and cool things that are happening, it wouldn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
The news survives off giving us depressing information.
Thrives off.
Check.
Yeah, it thrives and, off that.
You know,
yeah.
At the end of the day, if we're scared by watching the news all the time, you meet all these grannies that are like scared to leave the house just because they watch so much of the news.
I know,
in their head.
It's horrific.
You know, and that's what they want. So
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I'm not gonna go further, but you know,
no, for sure, definitely our grandparents' society, especially, I think, have really fallen into that trap because they watch so much news. They consume it way too much. Like, they'll listen to the news on the drive home from work. They'll watch news when they go home in the evening time. Like, you're consuming way too much of these horrible things that are happening in the world. Where it's like, yeah, it's bad, and it's good to have yourself be a little bit educated, but like, don't concern yourself too much.
You
can't control it.
It's only the things that the people that own the news want you to see.
There's good shit happening too. Yeah, exactly.
It's like, you notice, I'm not going to get too much into this, but
no, I know, yeah. There's wars that we're not reporting on and shit. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I know, yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah. Let's keep it a fun, lighthearted podcast, but they're definitely very good points, and I'm sure that YouTube channel explores it nicely. Let's wrap it up with some questions then.
Ooh. How many have we got?
We have three. Two of them are fucking stupid, to be honest. And then we have one good one. So let's do the stupid ones first.
Okay.
Is Mark Rufus, a comedian buddy of mine, asks, are you really the head of the Quickie Mart?
Huh?
Are you really the head of the Quickie Mart?
It's not funny, bro.
I'll give a political response to that question. I'm not, because I think that he should be played by a real Indian man.
Hmm. There we go.
Good answer, right? I think so. And then Bono GPM, some page, seems to be a collectibles page. Seems to have some really cool stuff there. Just says, similar question actually. Are you the Lizard Queen?
It's not funny.
Do you even know that's a reference to? No. I know. Where did we got like a very similar question? There's the episode where Selma takes Bart and Lisa to Duff Gardens, and Lisa drinks the water in like that kind of It's a Small World wide, right? And she gets drunk off it, and she's like all pale, and she's like, I'm the Lizard Queen. That's what it's a reference to.
Okay.
So I'm not the Lizard Queen, unfortunately.
No, I don't know what you want me to
do
if I say yes or no, it's not funny.
I know, yeah.
So
that's so true.
You've
given me nothing here.
Yeah.
I would just say I'm not Lizard Queen. That's obviously Lisa Simpson. So yeah, but the last question is good. Sophie Diabru, a buddy of mine from Cork, great question, kind of ties in with us covering Stark Raving Dad earlier. She just said, favourite guest star playing themselves and a character. I guess she means like favourite time the celebrity played themselves and favourite time the celebrity played just a regular character.
Okay.
Yeah, there's so many. The unfortunate thing about these questions is that like I see them in advance so I can think about them. And I also just have a...
True. Yeah.
A better encyclopedic Simpsons mind, you know. The ones that can't come to mind immediately. I don't know. Would you count Sideshow Bob as a guest there? Or has he done too many episodes that he's kind of just...
It's too easy.
The tricky one, yeah. But he's definitely one of my favorites. But yeah, maybe it's too easy. I mean, the one that comes to mind immediately, if I had to say like my favorite once-off guest there playing a character, I would say Dustin Hoffman as Mr. Bergstrom.
Fair.
He's a substitute, yeah.
Fair.
He's just a genuinely good performance from an actor.
Maybe say Frank Grimes.
That's Hank Azaria, though. That's the series.
But he's a guest character. Like, he's a one-off character.
She said celebrity playing
right,
a character, though. Yeah, so
you meant it's guest character and then just a celebrity. It's like two in one question.
I assume she means, like,
okay,
it not being a regular voice.
Okay.
Yeah, a regular voice actor.
I'll say Cypress Hill.
Cypress Hill is a great example, a great one. Yeah, everyone in Tom Palooza is like surprisingly brilliant despite the fact
and
they're musicians. Peter Frampton's so good.
As
Sonic
they
Youth.
They're coming back, so.
I know, doing the London Symphony Orchestra. So exciting. In June, I think. There's so many. I mean, there's literally hundreds of great ones. For some reason, Mel Gibson's coming to mind. I think he was great as himself in an episode where he makes the movie with Homer.
That was, I mean, I have fun. To say, out of, you know, Ricky Gervais.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah. And it's so good. That's a really good marriage because he wrote the episode and he is playing a character, but the character is a perfect Ricky Gervais part. You know, sure. So it's definitely a really good mix there, yeah. There's also a great episode in season 21 called Homer the Whopper, where it's written by Seth Rogen, and Seth Rogen plays Homer, becomes like a movie star, and Seth Rogen plays his agent, and that agent is, you know, the part's written by Seth Rogen for Seth Rogen, so that's a great part for him as well. I mean, that's like almost cheating, because if you've written the episode, it's just easier to write your own voice.
True.
But it works. Yeah. Those two examples are perfect examples, yeah. Dude, there's so many. I mean, Michael Jackson would definitely be up there. I love Leonard Nimoy as himself in the Monorail and the X-Files episode. Yeah. I think he's so funny as himself. Yeah, very willing to make fun of himself. The Beer Baron in the episode where they make beer illegal. I think he's a great character. There's so many, man. I could keep going. Those are just a few that come top of my head. I mean, Michael Jackson will be up there also. Mm. You can't not say him. He's brilliant. Yeah, is there anybody else like Buzz Aldrin, just because that's a crazy one that they even managed to get him
random,
you know? Yeah, very random. He's so good in it. Who else? Yeah, I love the Homer Palooza characters. Yeah, it's tricky. If I have to give a set answer on top of my head, favorite actor playing a character, Dustin Hoffman in Lisa Substitute.
Nice.
Favorite celebrity playing themselves, I think I'd have to go with, yeah, Leonard Nimoy. I just think he's so funny and is so willing to make fun of himself in those in those two examples I just gave, and put him very nicely. I also love David Duchovny and Julie Anderson playing Mulder and Scully in the X-Files episode. Yeah. Yeah, of course, they're both fantastic. Especially David Duchovny, I think he has a really good comedic timing. But yeah,
nice.
I think that's, you've done a pretty good deep dive into that answer there for sure. Thank you. That great question.
Good question.
One of the best ones we had in a while, actually. One that just really makes you think, you know. But yeah, guys, I think we'll wrap it up from there. Thank you guys as always for listening, and we will catch you real soon.
See you soon.
Bye bye.